Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Hannity tweeted, "I talked to hundreds of women at Fox this week, both on air and off. They say it all BS."
Brit Hume, too.
Brit?
"Why didn't Gretchen quit and sue instead of suing only after she got fired? Why didn't she complain?"
Why didn't she complain? Really?
Really? That clip you just heard arrives from the stylish new movie Bombshell about a real-life scandal. It was early July 2016. Former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson had just filed a sexual harassment suit against Fox News' visionary chairman, Roger Ailes. And for days, she twisted, alone. The question was, would other women at Fox join her? Ultimately, Carlson's actions inspired a wave of other accusations, forced Ailes' ouster, and provided the spark for what would turn into a national Me Too movement. Bombshell brings the scandal to the big screen with Nicole Kidman as Carlson, Charlize Theron as former Fox star Megyn Kelly, and John Lithgow as Ailes. Meanwhile, many of Ailes' actual accusers cannot themselves talk about what happened to them there. This hour, my chat with Bombshell director Jay Roach, and a bit later in the show, my conversation with Gretchen Carlson herself and former Fox News contributor Julie Roginski, both sued over Ailes' sexual harassment. Both reached settlements with Fox with strict non-disclosure agreements. And together, they both just launched a campaign against such legal requirements for silence. Join us. What questions do you have about Bombshell and Jay Roach's look at Fox News and the Ailes scandals? What do you make of the scandal's legacy 3 years later? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on the Twitters and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us now from NPR West in Culver City, California, Jay Roach. He's director of Bombshell, which opens in limited release today and nationwide on December 20th. Among the star-studded cast, as I said, are Kidman and Theron, both Oscar winners, Oscar nominees Lithgow and Margot Robbie. Roach previously directed hit comedies, including the Austin Powers films, Meet the Parents, and the Emmy-winning political docudramas Recount and Game Change. Jay, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the interest. It's good to be here.
You bet. So tell me what when this came across the transom for you and what interested you in telling this story?
I got it from Charlize in February 2018, and she originally just sent it to me to give notes as a friend. We had been working on something else, and I was just hooked on the script from the get-go because Charles Randolph wrote it. He wrote The Big Short, and it was at that good at, and you know, more. And it was about something I cared very much about, and I really just recommended she do it because I was just, that's all she was looking for was an opinion on whether she should do it. She hadn't really committed. She'd had it for a while. And in the course of giving her some thoughts about what I thought was powerful about it, she asked me to direct. I didn't expect that. And I said, yeah, only if you produce, because I know what a great producer she is. And I didn't think, you know, believe that I could do it alone as a man who has not experienced this kind of harassment, and that I needed a lot of very cool women, not just her, but all the rest of the cast and the other women producers. And so I found it, I told her I just thought she should do it because it seemed to me like a chance to surprise people, because what happened at Fox News was a very, empowering women's movement, if you will, within that company led by Gretchen. And it seemed to me to be the least likely place for that to happen. Roger Ailes was very powerful, and there was a sort of corporate systemic, you know, male egocentric thing going on there. And before, a year before the Harvey Weinstein news broke, Gretchen took it on. And then she did have to wait for a while, as you said in the intro. And that suspense of would women come forward is really what the movie is about, because Megyn Kelly has to decide whether she will. And then a bunch of other women have to decide. And they all end up eventually doing that and took him down. So I just thought it seemed like an incredibly compelling story in a somewhat surprising setting.
So it's interesting, though. You say the date that you did it, that Theron approached you was in sort of early 2018. I guess that's it was after sort of an incredible March. And, you know, my other job, I cover media, so I covered the stuff at Fox. And then I remember the fall of 2017, there's, you know, such stars, Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, all these major figures in media.
Avalanche, yeah.
It was an avalanche. Theron herself took on the role. Did she decide to take on the role of Megyn Kelly early in that process? Was that sort of from the get-go?
Well, it came to her. You know, Charles wrote it. He started writing it right after Roger was fired in 2016. He finished it before the Harvey thing and gave it to Charlize, you know, sometime in there in the fall of 2017. And so as it became more relevant, obviously, after the Harvey news broke, and then more and more people came forward. But he had always had her in mind to play Megyn Kelly, and she was just sort of brought in as a producer, but obviously with the idea that she'd be the ideal choice. It's hard to imagine, especially now, who else could have who could have done that. But as I say, she was just hesitant about it and wasn't sure exactly how to approach it. And so I had a whole pitch for her when I gave the notes, again, just recommending how I would go at it if you know, I was involved. And I didn't think I was going to be involved when I first told her about it. And the thing that I think I was able to have her see about it was this, the kind of world of Fox News from this almost, Roger Ailes wanted to run that place and succeeded to a large extent as a kind of cult of personality all around himself, you know, and required people to show loyalty, required people to allow him to bully them. You know, a lot of the kind of patterns of bad behavior that came out in many other companies later, it seemed to all be there, you know, and pretty open, pretty out in the open. And this was all happening right as Trump is, you know, and our story starts in summer 2015 during the primaries when Megyn Kelly attacks him or confronts him, I should say, for saying so many horrible things
about
women.
At that very first Republican primary debate in August 2015.
So there's an overlap, you know, that's really interesting in this story and the rise of Trump and his horrible behavior to women.
You know, you talk about, you call it a cult of personality. Certainly Fox, in retrospect, although obviously there was rife sexual harassment at other places, including CBS and certainly under Matt Lauer at NBC. But it seems as though Ailes, who really created Fox News with Rupert Murdoch starting in the fall of 1996, sort of backwards engineered the workplace of Fox as a place where it was rife with sexuality. There was the leg cam that lingered on women's legs. There was the insistence on certain kinds of outfits. You weren't allowed to wear pants if you were a female, or at least informally, you were basically told not to. There were all
there was
these
even
elements.
A woman who, there's even a woman who required you to have your skirt be a certain short length because every quarter inch supposedly meant more ratings. You know, it was very dark. It's almost the male gaze, you know, defined. It's like you couldn't find a better example of how a male-centric culture could require women to fit his sense of what would sell news.
And just as we talk now, you know, James Poniewozik had written a book, Audience of One, about how everybody is playing to Trump through Fox. On Fox News itself, the talent were all playing to Ailes. There was the sense of that he was the viewer that you cared about most because he really defined the network. And therefore, the idea of breaking with him, of accusing him of something was just an unimaginable step. I want to play a little clip from the movie capturing the deliberations Gretchen Carlson had to go through to decide to break with him so openly, publicly, and legally. So in 2016, in early June, she filed a lawsuit against Roger Ailes individually rather than against the network. And there's a reason for that. She had just left the network in late June of that year, a couple weeks before. In this scene from Bombshell, Carlson is played by Nicole Kidman, and she's seeking advice from lawyers on her legal strategy.
No one really wins by suing Fox News.
It's been our experience that once you go public in your job, no one will hire you.
If you're able to stick it out at Fox, gather more evidence.
You might be able to sue Ailes himself instead of Fox.
And that is why I'm here, because Marty Hyman told me that over here in New Jersey, I can avoid arbitration by suing Roger personally. He says that you've managed to change the law and that we could call other women and show a pattern.
Will other women come forward?
Yes, they will.
But Jay Roach, they didn't, at least not in those first days and not in public ways that Carlson knew about. How brave a step was it from Gretchen Carlson? How much in some ways is she the moral fulcrum of the movie?
Well, I think she did an incredibly brave thing. She was all alone for quite a while. She ended up paying quite a high price, too. She was never allowed to go back and anchor television, be a host or a television anchor again. She's done a lot of work recently, a really interesting work on helping women figure out how to navigate harassment claims in companies. And she's done a lot of work on lobbying Congress to prevent companies from silencing women with NDAs.
And we'll luckily time, talk again, to her later this hour about just that. But,
yeah,
but go ahead.
Great, yeah. But it, and that at this moment when this came forward, because it the sort of support system that emerged later after the Me Too news happened with the Harvey Weinstein thing, she didn't have that. She couldn't really expect to win this battle against such a powerful titan of media. And she, you know, really jumped, as we have a scene where she describes how she jumped off a cliff alone and expected more women to come forward. And they didn't right away. One interesting woman did, a woman named Rudy Bakhtiar, who we portray at the beginning of the movie when she's being hit on by a guy in a bar, and you hear her thoughts. and it's really disturbing, but she had a sort of incredible sense of humor about it, a dark, interesting irony as you hear her thoughts as this guy is harassing her. Anyway, she comes forward and did speak up and broke her NDA as Gretchen was there, but she hadn't been there for a while, so everyone was waiting for Megyn Kelly to figure out what she was going to do.
We're discussing Bombshell, the new movie about Roger Ailes, the sexual harassment scandals at Fox News that took him down, and Bill O'Reilly as well, and as well as some other prominent figures there. The scandal foreshadowed Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer, and more. Later this hour, we'll talk with two former Fox News stars depicted in the movie. You can join our conversation. What questions do you have for the director of Bombshell? How did the revelations about Ailes' behavior at Fox News in 2016 change how you viewed the network? I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm David Folkenflik. We're discussing the new movie Bombshell and sexual harassment at Fox News under the network's creator and former CEO Roger Ailes. You can join our conversation. What questions do you have about Ailes' treatment of women at Fox News during his 2 decades of leadership at the company? What lessons do you take from his downfall and the women who stepped forward to speak out against him? Follow us on the Twitters and Facebook at On Point Radio. A little bit later this hour, I'll speak with Gretchen Carlson. She's the former Fox News host whose lawsuit sparked a crisis at the network and forced Ailes' firing. Since departing the network, she's done a documentary with Norman Lear and has made 3 documentaries with the A&E cable channel. We'll also be speaking with former Fox News commentator and host Julie Roginski. She also sued Ailes for harassment and has returned to her work as a Democratic political consultant in her home state of New Jersey. The two of them are joining together in a campaign announced this week that Fox withdraw its insistence since they remain silent about their time at Fox News and working against such non-disclosure agreements more generally. With me now, joining us in studio from Culver City, California, from NPR West, Jay Roach. He's director of Bombshell, the major motion picture, which opens in limited release today and nationwide on December 20th. About all this issue. Jay, you know, it's fascinating. This is in some ways a story that's about 3.5 years old, and it's as timely as the last couple of days. Saw Harvey Weinstein reach a proposed settlement, it appears, with lawyers for a number of his many accusers, in which he would not have to admit any wrongdoing but would pay out some many millions of dollars distributed among many of these women. And yet another Fox News personality, Britt McHenry, a host on Fox's conservative streaming service Fox Nation, has filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against Fox News, and one of its on-air personalities, George Murdoch, not related to the Murdoch family that controls Fox. He goes by the name Tyrus on the air. The lawsuit filed in the Southern District of New York argues that Fox News retaliated against her after she accused Tyrus, her former co-host, of sexual harassment, and contends that the probes conducted by the network were or at least by firms on behalf of the network, were sham investigations. So this stuff is in some ways ongoing. One of the interesting things about this movie is, like Recount, right, like Game Change, which were done for HBO, if I'm not mistaken, there was a bit of a darkly comedic tone, both in the, I don't know, in the color palette, in the pacing, in the music. There was this is serious and in some ways soul crushing stuff, right? That the movie depicts, and at the same time, there is this sort of darkly ironic jauntiness to it. Tell me about how you approached the tone of this and why you decided that was a good way to go.
Well, I always try to arrive at tone by just being authentic to how the characters approach coping with the predicament, and invariably the women that I talked to who worked at Fox were quite aware of how just sort of absurd some of the behavior was sometimes. Just anybody at any news network knows that the behind the scenes thing is there's so much surreal, ironic things going on that's a lot different from what's coming out, you know, publicly, and that backstage environment, I just didn't think it would be authentic unless people had a dark sense of humor. Most of those people are, and especially these women, are strong, very savvy, cool, witty people who, even though they're suffering, you know, from abuse, they find a dark kind of gallows humor in it. And particularly in the scenes with Kate McKinnon, the great Kate McKinnon and Margot Robbie, we tried to give that perspective, and I think it also, of course, just helps the film not feel so self-serious and so preachy, because that would just, I think it would actually be doing a disservice to the issue to have it seem like medicine you have to take. These are real people coping with really tough things, and people do that through humor, and they also decide whether they can trust each other by whether they can joke about it. We all do that. We test each other's sympathies and predispositions by figuring out what are the basis for, you know, shared humor. So I thought it would be fake without some sense of humor, and I think that's been true in the political films too, because once again, you know, in the people around Sarah Palin's campaign, Nicole Wallace, Steve Schmidt, people now know because they're out on the air so much, they're very darkly funny people. And to have portrayed them without that sense of humor would have been, again, fake.
I want to play a clip or two from the movie to give listeners a feel for it before they get a chance to see it for themselves. Kayla Pospisil, please help me with that name.
That's right.
Pospisil is a composite character in the film. That is to say, she's an amalgam representing elements or facets of many of the women Ailes cultivated and then targeted as they navigated their careers at Fox News. In this scene, Kayla, a young producer portrayed by Margot Robbie, is devastated after being disparaged by her new boss for a story idea she pitched during a production meeting. That new boss is primetime host Bill O'Reilly. Kayla is consoled by another invented Fox News producer, Jess Carr, who's played by Kate McKinnon.
Oh my gosh. I can't get fired. This is the only job I have ever wanted. I don't want to be on TV. I want to be on Fox.
Uh-huh.
My family, every day, every holiday, like, is especially holidays. We watch Fox News. We're like addicts. Fox is how we do church. You know when they made the corner logo turn? Because folks had Fox burned into their TV screens? That's us.
Caleb, you're not getting fired. He cannot scale his anger. He's a perpetual outrage machine. That's why crazies love him. No offense to your family.
This is a pretty funny line from Kate McKinnon, who people may know best as Elizabeth Warren or Hillary Clinton on Saturday Night Live. A perpetual outrage machine it is. You guys don't get too much into Fox in terms of the substance it projects, although it's certainly a backdrop for all that's happening there. Mm-hmm. How much do you think what people see on the air influence what people experienced off the air there?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure, but I do think there is a sort of – Roger Ailes was a very paranoid person and has a kind of fear-based mythology during our story. And you can sort of sense that in the history of how Fox portrays our country, how we're always under attack. Just like Kate says in another time, this is a Fox story. If you just portray, everybody as criminals and out to attack your way of life and do it to whip up the sort of, just the political tribalism that we have, then that's a Fox story. And she, that comes from, I think, again, Roger's view of the world. And I don't know if where the overlaps are in his misogyny, but I'm sure if I had studied a little more of how that tracks into some of the news, you could probably find an approach to that. There's certainly an anti-political correctness intensity that comes out of Fox that was again, very much Roger. So these scenes expose some of that, and I think people who know Fox and watch Fox, and I do, I watch Fox all the time. My family watches Fox. I come from a conservative family, so I do try to keep track of how those ideas are expressed. And I think you're right. There was definitely an overlap of what he was doing with how the news is portrayed and how opinions are expressed on the network.
In the marketing for the film and in the film itself, there's a sense of, and I think you used the word earlier, of empowerment there, right? There's this, in the trailer you can see the three lead stars in the elevator together, and there's a friction. You have Gretchen Carlson, you have this imaginary young attractive producer played by Margot Robbie, you have Megyn Kelly in the person of Charlize Theron, and it's not that at the end, like the movie 9 to 5, all of them are working hand in hand and singing and getting drinks together. There's a tension and a friction and a difference. There's an incredible scene where Megyn Kelly tells the young amalgam fictional producer, basically, don't look to me to do anything publicly. I'm trying to figure out what's happening. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to put my neck on the line.
Yeah. If you saw the trailer, the original teaser trailer where the three women were in the elevator, it's the only time in the film where all three are together and each is experiencing some level of harassment, each has or is. And the Gretchen and Megan harassment was in the past, and Kayla, the Margot Robbie character, is experiencing it right now. And they can't even turn and help each other, figure out what's going on, support each other, because in that company, Roger Ailes pitted women against each other, made each fear being replaced by the other, and there was a sense of if we speak about it, we'll be punished. There was also a system by which, as we saw after Roger was accused, where women would come out and attack Gretchen Carlson. What she faced just for daring to speak up and sue Roger from other women in the company in terms of doubting her, attacking her credibility, smearing her character to some extent, and implying that she'd made up the harassment. That is not uncommon in a lot of these situations, but Fox has Roger had a way of requiring loyalty to such a degree that to show loyalty, you had to attack anybody who dared come forward and say he was harassing them.
I believe there was something in Julie Roginski's lawsuit against Fox in which she talked about this idea of Team Roger, that is, that people yeah. were going around former Fox figures like Kimberly Guilfoyle and others basically trying to berate mm-hmm. other females to publicly defend him, you know, in a way you know, in a way that yes. exposed them later to getting incredible blowback, because it turned out a lot of the claims and accusations were substantiated. And indeed, Fox News itself and its parent company apologized to Gretchen Carlson, validating the accusations that were made. You talk about the idea that if you're attacking Fox or you're attacking Roger, and if you're attacking Roger, you're attacking Fox. There's a scene that captures that in some ways. As public pressure mounts heavily on Ailes after Carlson's lawsuit becomes public, you know, Ailes in the movie, as in real life, insisted on absolute loyalty and never more than when he was under fire. Here's a scene from Bombshell where Ailes is portrayed under a ton of prosthetics and makeup by John Lithgow. He summons Fox News executives to his office to build support for him within the network.
A TV outfit needs tough, confident women. Do I push them? You bet your ass I do. But have I ever demanded sex during a casting session? I defy you to find any evidence that a single part of what these women are saying is true. Get ready. More will come. We need to let Rupert know what it means if I lose. Gretchen Carlson could kill Fox News. This is a fight for your jobs. If I go, you go.
And as it turned out, the Murdoch's sons decided that he was dispensable, and Rupert Murdoch went along and sort of enjoyed running Fox for a while in the absence of Rupert Murdoch. Similar dynamic played out at CBS with Les Moonves. There, I do want to ask you. You talked about what it was as a guy to come into this. You know, this is about sort of very male centric run corporate structures, which is not uncommon in American life, but nonetheless, did you have any trepidation at this point? Do you have any second doubts about being a male director with a male screenwriter on this, even in working with a producer and a star as impressive as Charlize Theron, as well as Nicole Kidman and Margot Robbie, for that matter?
You know, we worked really closely with Charlize if you'd really have to believe in the auteur theory that the director is the only person that matters on a set, to think that's how this one went. Charlize was on set every day, even when she wasn't starring, and was a big part of in prep, you know, talking about the script, and all of the other actors and women producers were too. But I'll tell you, the most important collaborators were the women of Fox. We talked to about 20 different women, all completely off the record, presumably all breaking their NDAs to talk to us, because Fox requires everybody to sign an NDA. And we tried to just listen and turn them into our most important collaborators, because the stories they told were heartbreaking and amazing. And again, the Rudy Bakhtiar story is such a fascinating one. We've protected their anonymity and haven't revealed unless someone has come forward and acknowledged that they spoke with us. And Rudy has, and she did talk to us, and she helped us with the scene where she's being harassed.
It was a very lively scene.
And you hear her thoughts, and she starts to figure out this guy is talking about promoting her, but then he invites her to his hotel room.
In any event, you're talking about Rudy Bakhtiar is at this scene with Brian Wilson, who's a host of Fox News. He also is, at a certain point, perhaps at this point, the Washington bureau chief for Fox News, and he's made very clear what he expects in exchange for him promoting her to a major job in Washington.
That's right. And she, you know, is 3 years into her Fox contract. She's a rising star, and 6 months in, the guy hits on her, and she doesn't even complain. She just mentions it to somebody. It gets up to the bosses, and they fire her for it. And I just that story, as she told it to us, is how just was an example of how just describing what she was thinking as she tried to just placate this guy's ego and escape without, you know, losing her job. But then she kind of sensed she was going to lose it, and she did, and she never got to work in television again. You know, and this was in 2006. So these stories were how we tried to just be as authentic to the truth of what these women went through. As men, we were just listening. And what I also hope happens is that other men pay attention and have the kind of life-changing experience Charles and I did by just empathizing with these stories that you think you might know, even as a sensitive male, And until you hear how these women are made to feel ashamed, to question everything they did, and end up paying such a high price just for coming forward, it's pretty tough to, you know, to get that if you haven't experienced it yourself.
Briefly, just in the last 35, 40 seconds I have for you, how important was it to capture the overall truth as opposed to hewing closely to the facts of what occurred?
I've made a number of these kinds of films now, and as doing a two-hour version of a year-long story, you have to take license. And what I do think the audience expects you to be as authentic as you possibly can, but they also expect the story to play and to be distilled into something that's powerful. And we do in this film break the fourth wall from time to time and remind the audience that this is a film, this is a construct, but you can count on us to have done so much research, talked to so many people, to go directly into the essence of it, that even though there are composite characters representing other people that we couldn't name, that it seems real. And the women who were there, who saw it, seem to agree that there's something very authentic about it.
We've been speaking with Jay Roach. He's director of the new big movie Bombshell about Roger Ailes' downfall. Thank you so much, Jay Roach, for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's really good to be here, David. Thank you.
And we're discussing the numerous cases of sexual harassment at Fox News and the women who took Fox and Roger Ailes and held them accountable. We'll be joined after the break by two former Fox News hosts, Gretchen Carlson and Julie Roginski. They both recently founded a campaign to banish non-disclosure agreements. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. Previously this hour, we've been speaking about a new major movie depicting a climate of rampant sexual harassment at Fox News, perpetrated and fostered by its founding CEO and chairman, Roger Ailes. We now turn the page to a discussion with two women who figure in the film and went through those experiences in real life, former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson and former Fox News commentator and guest host Julie Roginski. Both accused Roger Ailes of harassment and sued him for it. Carlson's suit triggered the 2016 scandal and was the bombshell to which the new film's title refers. Roginski sued the following year. Each continues to be subject to non-disclosure agreements imposed by Fox News after settling with the network. You can join our conversation. What questions do you have for my guests? Follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me from Greenwich, Connecticut, Gretchen Carlson. She was a Fox News host from 2005 until 2016. She was paid $20 million and received an apology after filing a sexual harassment suit against her former boss, Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes was paid $40 million to leave Fox News. Carlson is portrayed in Bombshell by Nicole Kidman. Gretchen Carlson, welcome to On Point.
Hi, David. Great to be with you again.
And joining me from her home state of New Jersey is Julie Roginski. She's a Democratic Party strategist there and a former Fox News contributor. Her lawsuit against Fox News and Ailes was settled in late 2017. She also remains under the terms of that non-disclosure agreement reached with the network. And she is also portrayed as a character in Bombshell. Julie, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, David.
Both of my guests have recently formed the organization Lift Our Voices, urging corporations to stop using so-called NDAs to hide incidents of workplace harassment and workplace misconduct, and we'll be talking about that during this segment. I do want to ask what it's like to be portrayed on the big screen. Gretchen Carlson, I'm going to play you a little clip of what Nicole Kidman had to say. She's, of course, the Academy Award-winning actor. She played Gretchen Carlson in the movie Bombshell. I might add that Kidman's real life, one of her best friends is the actor Naomi Watts, who portrayed Gretchen Carlson in the Showtime series, The Loudest Voice. Here's what Nicole Kidman described as the different relationships, the three main characters in the film, that is Gretchen Carlson, Megyn Kelly, and a young producer, had with Roger Ailes.
You really, I think, viscerally feel through both Megan and through Kayla the abuse. I think with Gretchen, you're seeing, you don't get to see her actually in the room with Ailes and what's going on as much. So therefore, you see her when she's, what she's up against and what she's trying to change and what she's trying to, what she considers is her right. And that's powerful, I hope.
What was it like for you, Gretchen Carlson, to see your legal struggle, your internal dilemmas, the consequences of blowing the whistle on this, depicted on the big screen like this?
Yeah, it's complicated, David. Maybe you saw that I just wrote a New York Times op-ed on this very thing because Julie and I and so many others across our country have been silenced by being forced to sign NDAs when you come to resolution with these types of things. But, you know, listen, I have to look at this in the big picture. These projects I never in my wildest dreams thought were going to be done about my story. You know, quite honestly, when you do something like I did, which took immense courage and the biggest decision of my life, you didn't know or I didn't know what was going to happen the next minute, much less the next day. And we weren't in the Me Too environment. We didn't have any Time's Up legal defense fund. It was pretty much me. And so the idea that I could have known that major motion pictures and a Showtime miniseries would be made about my story, there's just no way. But big picture, I have to say that, look, we're continuing the conversation, and that's amazing because we would have never been having this conversation 3.5 years ago about sexual harassment in the workplace. And if these projects encourage even just one more woman to come forward and say, me too, then it's worth it. But at the same time, it's strange and frustrating, which is why Julie and I have formed Lift Our Voices to eradicate NDAs, because women should have a voice, and they should be able to tell their painful and their happy stories.
Julie, I want to make sure that I get the chance to ask you. You're also depicted. You're not as major a character in film. You're depicted in it by name. I think at one point you're shown slipping out of your everyday clothes and squeezing into whatever sort of Fox wrap is being placed on you. What was it like to see yourself on the big screen, or a version of yourself on the big screen?
Well, it's a version of myself, and unfortunately, as Gretchen pointed out, I can't tell you how accurate that version is because we are bound by these NDAs. It's a surreal experience, as Gretchen described, to see yourself. But I think the bigger issue about these movies, and when you watch Bombshell, and certainly when I watched The Loudest Voice, as somebody who had been at Fox News when Gretchen dropped her Bombshell and was there for an additional year to watch the fallout, the departure of Roger Ailes, the switch to Bill Shine as the head of the network after Roger Ailes left. What was interesting to me is that in the moment, what you realize when you're there is what an absolute change Gretchen created and what a dynamic she created. And I'm not sure that any movie has really adequately captured what all of us who were there at the time felt, and certainly what I think I see now in hindsight, which is that you really did have a woman who had absolutely no guarantee whatsoever that she would succeed, and in fact, pretty much a guarantee of failure because nobody had ever done this before.
The courage that took was
tremendous. And I think it's interesting to watch yourself in movies, but I think that's the message that these movies, I think, need to really get out there, is that this was an absolutely courageous move that took place, and I'm not sure that it's yet appreciated as to how huge that step was for Gretchen to take.
I want to drill down on that because I'm not sure it's a question I can pose to Gretchen, right? But I think, and this is a moment that we're doing on live radio here, I think I can pose it to you, Julie Roginski, about Gretchen Carlson. You know, what was the climate for Gretchen before she did this, and what had she endured, not just from Ailes, but from the kinds of executives who had protected him for so long?
Well, I certainly can't speak to what the climate was for Gretchen, because you have to understand that none of us ever discussed these issues with us. There was certainly a culture of silence, and it was only when Gretchen filed her lawsuit that others began to consider their own situation and begin to really dwell on what happened to them as well. And the climate was one of shock, certainly, that Gretchen did this. I remember exactly where I was on the 12th floor of Fox News when I found out that Gretchen filed her lawsuit, and it was exactly what the movie depicts. It was a bombshell, something that nobody anticipated ever happening, and then certainly nobody gave Gretchen, either privately or publicly, any chance of success. I certainly never believed that she would be able to be as effective as she was. I certainly never believed that anything could change. This is, as Gretchen pointed out, right before the Me Too movement really took off. She was the first to do this, and so there was no precedent for something like this happening. And then, certainly, in very short order, Gretchen was successful, and Roger Ailes did depart. And more women, I believe, began to come forward. I certainly was able to come forward because Gretchen led the way in many ways. But there was a culture of disbelief, both in that Gretchen would succeed and also a culture of disbelief that anything would change. And while I think a lot has changed, a lot more needs to be done. Again, this is why Gretchen and I founded this organization called Lift Our Voices. We want to make sure that people who are in situations like ours are able to discuss them. The more you air these issues, the more predators will no longer be able to prey on people, the more toxic work environments will no longer exist for not just women, but for men as well. And I think it's important to note that none of this would have been possible, this discussion would not have been possible, had Gretchen not done what I consider to be one of the most courageous things I've ever seen, which is, this, as she describes it, jump off a cliff. As I describe it, really jump out of an airplane without a parachute, mm-hmm. with zero, almost zero chance of success. And somehow she not only succeeded, but thrived.
Gretchen Carlson, you know, as I mentioned to Jay Roach earlier this hour, you know, it is a scandal that broke into the open 3.5 years ago, thanks to you. And yet it is one which has resonance this week, the last couple of days. Britt McHenry, a former or a Fox News Nation host and a Fox News contributor, filed a suit against her former co-host and against Fox after complaining to a state agent, labor agency about that. And Harvey Weinstein reached at least an initial settlement with victims that would not require him to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but would pay distribute some money, a deal struck to their lawyers. An interesting and complicating side note is Britt McHenry's attorney, I believe, is Lisa Bloom, who herself for a good stretch represented Harvey Weinstein and advised him legally as he was going through some of his initial efforts to stave off accusations in 2017. How much has changed, and what will getting corporations to abandon the non-disclosure mandates as part of these settlements, at least as far as the actual misconduct goes, do to try to change corporate cultures themselves?
Yes. So as you just described, how complicated this issue is. And when I filed my case, David, I had no idea how tough it was going to be to solve. It's a tangled web, as I describe it. And you know from interviewing me before that I've become incredibly active in trying to make the world better for women after my case. And that has meant, you know, me writing a book, Be Fierce, as sort of a guidebook if women are facing this in the workplace. It's also meant me spending a tremendous amount of time on Capitol Hill trying to pass legislation to eradicate forced arbitration clauses in employment contracts, which also keep this issue secret. Now we're on to the next mission together, Julie and I and Diana Falzone at Fox News, formerly of Fox News, to eradicate NDAs. Listen, if I would have known what I know now about how much progress we would have made in this cultural revolution in the last 3.5 years, I would have fought back incredibly hard to not sign that NDA. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, this is the latest phase of the evolution. How would I have known that we might actually be having a discussion where companies might be in a precarious situation of pressure to not be able to force women into secrecy anymore? You know, the progressive part of my settlement was that I got a public apology. That had never happened before. I also was given the ability to talk about this issue, which I have done tremendously on behalf of all women to try and make it better. Now, 3.5 years later, we're in this next stage of the revolution, which is we believe women should not be silenced, and men anymore, in being forced to sign these non-disclosures. And that's why we would encourage people to go to liftourvoices.com and join our mission and our fight.
if I'm not mistaken, Gretchen Carlson, at the time of your lawsuit, the thing that in some ways amazed people about the settlement was that you got an apology publicly. People thought that wasn't going to happen. I guess in some ways the non-disclosure thing on your part was the next step that you couldn't quite see your way to. I do want to take a couple of quick calls for the two of you. Stacy is calling from New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks so much for listening, Stacy. Share your thoughts.
Hi. Gretchen, I was at Stanford at the same time that you were, and also a fellow musician. And while there, and as well as subsequently, I've unfortunately experienced some sexual assault incidents. So first of all, I would like to thank you for your courage and bravery and tenacity for doing what you've done. And secondly, I just wonder if you think we're making any progress with the legal definition of PTSD and how cases are being handled, because I know that I've been encouraged not to discuss the psychological ramifications of what's happened to me, but rather try to dwell on the physical. And I just wonder if we've made much progress in that department.
Thank you for that, Stacy. I appreciate it. Let me throw that to you, Gretchen Carlson.
Yeah, thank you so much, Stacy. And it's amazing how we all have this connection as women, and certainly the connection of Stanford University. I appreciate you reaching out here. You know, PTSD is something that we're just beginning to talk about with regard to harassment. Again, it's one of these issues where we were always told to just go away and never bring it up ever again, and for that matter, never come about it at all. And I think what's so important is to know that it's okay to talk about this, Stacy. It's okay to share your feelings. I experienced the same thing. I'm sure Julie does as well. There are certain parts of New York City that I'd rather not visit ever again. and you can guess where that might be. And, you know, this is something that we have to share with our children as well and talk openly about this so that future generations don't go through what we've gone through. Until we talk openly about everything that happens with regard to being harassed in the workplace, including PTSD and the emotions that come with it and the grief and the how can I get out of this dark, deep hole, we're not going to heal as a nation. So it's all part of this, and I hope, Stacy, you'll join Julie in my fight with our organization, Lift Our Voices.
We're getting notes from listeners. One texted to say, you know, as a young woman and working in Hollywood, I was sexually harassed as a union film worker by well-known award-winning cameramen. It never occurred to me there was anyone I could go to complain about it. And I think that, you know, as depicted in the movie, there's a sense that there may well have been a place to call to complain, but there was no knowledge of how to do that. One question, Julie Roginski, in the moment that we have left, if women are able to get corporations not to have non-disclosure agreements on such things, does that not in some ways cut away some of their legal leverage on this?
Well, there's a way to think about it that's completely a different paradigm than we've thought about it before. If corporations and executives know that they can't buy silence by spending insurance money to do it, they may change their behavior and there will be no need to call them out and no need to sue and no need to persist in having this fight. I mean, it is galling to me, and I'm sure it is to a lot of other women, that you have had very prominent men be able to get away with bad behavior by effectively silencing women with a settlement. I don't blame the women for taking a settlement. It's incredibly traumatic to have to go through a very prolonged litigation process. It's incredibly traumatic to have to put your career on hold to do that, never mind the fact that a lot of people don't have access to money for legal fees. Mm-hmm. But if you are able to actually publicly speak about what you're experiencing, it may make the men think twice about actually engaging in toxic workplace behavior, and I think that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Exactly.
You've been hearing so true, Julie. You've been hearing you can hear it's a 1-2 team. I got to cut you off there.
Yeah.
We've been hearing from Gretchen Carlson. She's former Fox News host and co-founder of Lift Our Voices. Thanks, Gretchen, for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks, too, to Julie Roginski, Democratic strategist, former Fox News contributor, also a co-founder of Lift Our Voices. Pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thanks very much, David.
You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on the Twitters and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daumai, Lena Mata, Stefano Katsonis, Wes Martin, James Ross, Dory Scheimer, Alex Schroeder, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Sharif Campbell, Jeffrey Lyon, and Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Me, I'm David Folkenflik. Thanks for listening. this is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices. And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.